Good, Adam. How you doing?
Fantastic. Always good. Whenever we get to talk about this stuff, I'm always in a good mood.
Absolutely. Me too.
And I said it's a special episode tonight. Why is it a special episode, Jordan?
Well, it is a special episode because we have a very special topic that I think both of us are really excited about. So it's special for that reason. It's also special because we are acting like Barry Allen tonight. And we are doing some time travel because we don't know when the hell you're going to be hearing this episode. But we are recording this episode as sort of a, I don't know, I guess you could call it a backlog episode for when we might not be able to record 1 week. So we've got this, you know, special treat in place. And what we're going to be talking tonight about tonight, I should say, is our ideal live-action Superman castings. And I should explain what I mean by that. We're going to go through basically the key players in Superman's mythology, and basically we tried to pick pretty much all of them that have at least three live-action actors that have played them before. I think that we got all of them. I think that we got all the main players by going that way. We're going to do a Batman one in the future as well.
If we miss any, you can yell at us in the comments, I'm sure.
Yes, absolutely. And I should say right now, once we give ours, once you listen to this episode, please send in your picks as well. We'd love to hear them, and we'd love to share those also in a future episode. So I think that would be really cool to hear from you. But basically, we picked Adam and I both have picked our favorite live-action actors for each of these characters. So, yeah.
Sounds like fun. Let's get to it.
Absolutely. So our first character up is Lara, which is Superman's biological mother. So who do you have for Lara, Adam?
Oh, well, I'm going to go with it's an easy choice for me. Man of Steel's Ailette Zur. I thought she did a fantastic job in the brief moments she had in Man of Steel. I really got a sense of the emotion and the heartache that she felt when she had to rocket her infant child off to an unknown planet. And it was very emotionally riveting. And to me, she did it much better than any of the other actors that we've seen so far.
I agree with you, Adam, because I have the same pick. And that's also, I don't know how you pronounce her name. I think I'm going to go with, how did you pronounce it?
Ailette Zur, I think.
Yes. Okay.
I could be butchering her name, but but that's how when I see it, that's how I read it.
Yes.
She's more than welcome to come on this podcast and correct us if she wants to.
Yes, please. if you're listening to this,
she has no idea who the hell we are. Let's be honest.
Oh my goodness. But anyway, she's a great Lara. I also really enjoyed her as Vanessa on Daredevil season one.
Yeah, you know, I gotta admit, now that you brought that up, I'm a little upset that Superman's mom was cheating on Jor-El with a Daredevil villain, but I'll forego that.
She was great.
We're coming on your show. I said, we're gonna go on Maury Povich. Who's the father, Kingpin or Jor-El? Yeah.
Oh my goodness, that's great.
Talk about alternate universe stories. That's one for the ages.
Yeah, no kidding. But yeah, as you were saying, she was great in Man of Steel. I mean, she didn't have that big a role, but you know, when she was, like you said, when she was saying goodbye to her son and sending him off, and she's like, I don't know if I can do this. She was talking to Jor-El, and then also I liked when Krypton was being destroyed, and she was there, and she talked with Kilex right before the planet was destroyed, and so I just thought she did such a great job in those scenes. Okay, so our next character, I guess, is Jor-El, so her husband. So, yeah.
Who's your pick for Jor-El?
Okay, all right, we're swapping back and forth, I guess. Okay, that works. Russell Crowe is my choice for Jor-El. I loved him in Man of Steel, so another Man of Steel actor that I'm picking for Jor-El. And I just thought, I mean, some of that Krypton stuff at the beginning of Man of Steel was really just amazing. And then also I love Jor-El and his conversations with Zod when he was sort of when it wasn't technically Jor-El, but when it was his AI. And right. And also when he was. And I guess my favorite scene in the entire movie Man of Steel is Russell Crowe's line as Jor-El, where he's talking, where he's in the flight scene, where he's talking to Kal-El, and he's telling him they will stumble, they will fall. But I just think that's one of the most beautiful speeches ever, and that he has to Superman when he takes his first flight. So yeah, Russell Crowe for me.
Yeah, and look, we're going to make it 2-for-2, and I'm going to say Russell Crowe as well, because he has, like, to me, what Russell Crowe is able to evoke in his performance is, Jor-El's supposed to be a scientist first and foremost, and I can buy that Russell Crowe is this very smart, educated dude. I get that off of him when I see him in roles, I buy that on him, but I also like that he was, while he was more stoic than Lara in that moment, he still showed plenty of emotion. But it was almost like calming is not the right word, but it's like he had this confidence in what he was, that he knew that what he had chosen for his son was ultimately the right choice. And I like that. And I also like that in this film, Jor-El got to kick some ass and show that he was competent. Like, to me, and pretty much every other version of Superman presentation in live action, Jor-El is this pontificating, individual who just spouts platitudes to his son, right? And yes, Russell Crowe does that, but the fact that he's able to, like I said, he has something to do other than just be a CGI construct in this film. I thought, to me, that put the performance over the top. That we got to see, like, he took heroic action physically against Zod, and which carries over to his son later on in the film. And so I really like that. So that's why all those factors make him my Jor-El choice.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with you 100%, Adam. Our next character is Supergirl slash Kara Zor-El, of course.
You're saving Superman to the end?
What's that?
Why do I get the sense that you're saving Superman for last?
Well, of course I'm saving Superman for last.
Just wanted to confirm my theory. All right.
Yes. I didn't do these. I'm not doing this list in order of like their significance, really. Okay, all right, but okay. I did make sure that we would talk about Superman last. But with this one, well, I will say, just like with Superman, because these are the two characters on the list that have two identities, basically. So if you have a different choice for the different identities, you could say a different choice for the different identities. Okay. But yeah, it can be the same, but it doesn't have to. So
Supergirl,
yeah.
That's what I'm doing, Supergirl?
Yeah, Super. Do you have two different ones for Supergirl and Kara, or are they the same?
No, I think it's pretty much the same.
Okay, yeah, go ahead.
And it's, for me, without a doubt, Melissa Benoist, who's currently playing the role on TV. I just, like, there is a, there is a warmth to her character as Supergirl. There's also a strength to her character as Supergirl, but there's also a naivete, like she's new at this, she's relatively new at this. And she balances all those three perfectly. While I don't like the idea that she is also going to be a reporter in her secret identity as Kara Danvers, I think that's too derivative of Superman. Like, they could have given her something else to do. Like, when she was Kat's assistant, I much preferred that as opposed to this in season two where she's going to be the reporter. Having said that, there is a distinction between her Supergirl and her Kara. Whereas with Smallville, as much as I love Laura Vandervoort, the secret identity aspect of it was virtually non-existent most of the time. So I couldn't give it to her. And I just really don't like the Supergirl live action movie at all. So I wasn't going to bring that into the conversation. So that's why it's Melissa Benoist on both counts.
Okay, well, here, let's let the suspense build. Are we going to go 3 for 3, agree, or not? And I guess what I'll start out by saying is that...
Drum roll. I don't have drum.
Drum roll, yes. Yes, indeed. this was the toughest one for me to pick on the list. Every single other choice on this list, I knew in an instant who I was picking. This was the only one I really had to think about. And I thought about this for several minutes, and I really sat down and sort of pondered it, and I was like, huh. So I was going back and forth between two choices, and those are Melissa Benoist and Laura Vandervoort. Ultimately, we are not going 3 for 3 in terms of agreement, because I did go with Laura Vandervoort.
Fair enough.
And the reason for that is because I love Melissa Benoist in the role, but ultimately what it came down to was I really liked Kara's relationship with Clark on the show, and how he sort of mentored her and when she came to Earth, and really I liked the dynamic between the two of them, and I really thought it was a little bit more comic accurate, and that plays really into Supergirl's personality too on Smallville, where she's very sort of reckless, and she's inexperienced, and she goes into situations that without totally thinking things through, and then I feel like that was more comic accurate, and they played into that a little bit more in Supergirl season 2 in terms of Melissa Benoist's version of the character. But I thought that
I think to me, just not to interrupt, but that came in season 2 because Superman was actually present.
Yeah, it did. But ultimately, I think that they played it more on Smallville than they did there, and So I think that's what gave it the edge, and I think her dynamic with Clark I liked better on Smallville. And also, Smallville is my favorite TV show of all time, so that I have a little bit of Smallville bias here, too.
And look, there's part of me that really wanted to choose Laura Vandervoort because she's Canadian. She's from my hometown of Toronto. And she even went to the same branch of karate school that I currently go to. So it was a hard choice not to go with my homegirl. Even though I have never met her at all, but I'm gonna call her my homegirl because it makes me feel special, damn it. So I really wanted to go with her, but I just had to give it to Melissa on this one. But I totally understand your reasoning, for sure.
Yeah, both great choices. Like I said, it really that was a really hard one for me to pick. So yeah, definitely. Next up on the list, we've already done Superman's biological parents, but now let's move into his adoptive parents with Martha Kent.
Oh, I'm sure this will make every Batman vs. Superman detractor sick just because we mentioned the name Martha, but I digress.
Oh, no.
I'm going to do it on purpose. Martha. but
why'd you say that name, Adam?
I love that scene, by the way. I don't care who doesn't like it. You can all.
Me too. That scene, I literally teared up in the theater during that scene.
When we get to our Batman vs. Superman review, I'm going to piss off a lot of people. I just warned everybody right now.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's a very divisive movie, so I feel like any opinions on that movie are going to piss somebody off, but...
In in terms of my favorite Martha Kent, not Wayne, but Kent, I'm going to have to go with Diane Lane from Man of Steel. I love her. And that the scene where in Man of Steel when she goes to the closet and Clark is at school and he locked himself in, that whole scene broke my heart. Really did with that, with her and young Clark there, and how she was always there to, you know, give him advice either throughout that film, right, and then later on in Batman versus Superman, and you know, the scene where she got worried about when he says I found out, you know, who my real parents were, when they were on the porch in Man of Steel. And she gets emotional and she tells him how she used to go watch him sleep and listen to him breathe. Man, that pulled at my heartstrings just to hear him breathe. I mean, that, to me, that just, it got me, and it gets me every time I watch the movie. And I find that Man of Steel does the best job of, because in most Superman incarnations, he's always going to Jonathan Kent for advice. In this one, it flips the switch and really keys in on Martha and gives her a bigger role in that aspect. And so, I couldn't not give it to Diane Lane.
I think that's a great argument for Diane Lane, and I thought she was great. However, my pick is Annette O'Toole. The reason for that, I guess, I mean, part of this is not even the acting. Part of it is just I feel like yeah. Well, it is my Smallville bias. You'll see. Hold on. Let me look at this list. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
You know, we're gonna. Six. I'm just gonna call it right now. We're gonna have a real problem against the Superman. Because if you throw out the name, I think you're gonna throw out.
Okay, let me say this. Let me preface this by saying 1, 2, 3.
Folks, there's going to be a co-host job available real soon on this one.
Eight out of my 13 picks, because there's 13 on this. Are there 12? There's either 12 or 13. Eight out of my 12, I think, actually, are Smallville actors for this. So Annette O'Toole is another one, and I think part of it is that we had – with Diane Lane, we had 2 movies with her. With Annette O'Toole, we had 6 seasons of Smallville with her, plus a couple other episodes, too, in addition to that. So it's like you really got to see so much more of her, I think, is part of it. And, like, I just thought she had so much – like you said with Diane Lane, and you're right about Diane Lane, she had all these scenes with Clark and, you know, giving advice and stuff. But I think we got a lot of that with Annette O'Toole's version of the character, too, especially after Jonathan died.
Yeah, my only problem with your choice is she was virtually a cameo for the first 5 seasons when Jonathan was around, and then kicked in later when he was dead. But that's why I didn't choose. But I understand your choice.
Okay. I wasn't sure if I should say put out a spoiler for that. But you know what?
This show has been off the air since 2011. If you don't know that Jonathan Kent died in that show, like, do you not know the mythology of Superman? Come on.
Yeah, okay. All right. Yeah, it's fine. Okay, it's fine. I don't feel so bad about that. Okay.
There's a time for spoilers. And there's a time for bloody obvious. This is bloody obvious.
Yeah, okay, all right, fair enough. So anyway, but in season 6 especially, because that was the only season of Smallville where she was a series regular where Jonathan wasn't there, because then she wasn't a series regular after that. In that season particularly, I think there was a lot of great scenes where she was giving Clark advice, and especially also in season 5, towards the end of season 5 too, after Jonathan had passed. And like, there's that one scene that always stands out to him where Clark comes home and she's watching the videos of him and Jonathan on the television. Mm-hmm. And I think that's just one of my favorite scenes in the whole show, and where it's after that scene where Clark's been in a really bad place in the episode after Jonathan passed. And so I think that's just such a powerful emotional scene that Annette O'Toole shared with Tom Welling. So I think for me, it's Annette O'Toole.
I agree with that for sure. I mean, that's fair to say that your arguments for it, I would agree. And I did like that scene that you mentioned. Who's next on the list? Obviously.
Cool. Yeah. Well, it would be Martha Kent's husband. Yes. So Jonathan Kent.
And I think we're going to agree here. Or who's going first? Me or you?
I think. Did you? Yeah, you went. Okay. I guess it is
my turn. Yeah, I went with Martha because I was making fun of the BBS haters. Yeah. All right.
Okay.
Yeah, it's your turn. Go ahead.
So I don't think this is going to be any surprise. But John Schneider, also from Smallville. Just over those first five seasons, I mean, just all the great advice that he gave Clark. Almost every episode, just Clark going to him for advice, and he really shaped the man that Clark would become in that show. And you really got to see that progression over those first five seasons. And I mean, when he did die in season five, it was just one of the most heartbreaking things ever. And, another scene from the show when he came back, I cried at the scene in season 10 when he came back, and he was like, he was working on the fence, and Clark talked to him in season 10. I think it was in the season 10 premiere.
Yeah.
And I mean, just his performance in that show as Jonathan Kent, really, you could see why why Clark became who he is as Superman. And you could see the values that Jonathan Kent instilled in him. And I just think John Schneider did such a phenomenal job in that show.
Yeah. I mean, to me, he's the pitch-perfect Jonathan Kent. There's nothing else I could say but that. He embodies every quality you want. And he did such an amazing job to the point that if I ever meet him at a convention, I'm just going to ask him for advice.
Yeah.
Get his thoughts on things, you know. But you're right. I was very torn up. I cried like a baby. In that episode when he died.
Yeah.
I cried too in season 10 when he came back, but that was at the finale when I realized that we were never actually going to see Clark in the suit. That's when I started crying, but I digress. 10 years and it's a CGI anyway. I mean, he was just incredible in the role, and he's created the measuring stick for, in my opinion, for Jonathan Kent portrayals.
Yeah, he's absolutely.
He's the gold standard, and more than that, I don't know what more there is to say on that.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I mean, it was just it's hard to even do justice to how good a job he did in the role.
We'll do it when we cover Smallville, but we'll go more in depth. But yeah,
absolutely. All right. Well, I guess moving on to General Zod. So who are you going to kneel before, Adam?
Well, my honest answer is anything Margot Robbie wants me to do, I'll do. But we're not talking about that. we're talking about General Zod. And my favorite General Zod, I couldn't resist. My General Zod of choice is Michael Shannon from Man of Steel. Because he genuinely, there was an authoritativeness and a commanding presence like never before that I saw with Zod. I mean, like, don't get me wrong, Terrence Stamp was good, but he became meme-worthy with the way he delivered that kneel before Zod line, after a certain point. It became a farce on Robot Chicken or some show like that, I think, at one point. but Michael Shannon was so powerful and so, you know, in that performance, he felt imposing and commanding just by just the way he spoke, the way he moved, the way he stood. And then, but the thing that Man of Steel and Michael Shannon did really well is there were legitimate moments in that film where I understood General Zod's position. I didn't agree with his methods, but I understood his reasoning. His whole purpose in life was the protection and preservation of the Kryptonian society. And that's why he was doing what he was doing. He wasn't right by any means of the imagination of how he executed that goal. Or how he wanted to execute that goal. But the scene where spoilers for Man of Steel. When Clark destroys the pods with the, you know, the embryos with the Kryptonian, with the future Kryptonians inside it. And when he sees all that rubble and he's like, this is what you've done to our people. I really felt sadness for General Zod in that moment. And no other portrayal of Zod has been able to do that for me. To make me fear, yet somehow sympathize the General Zod. It takes a special performance. And I think Michael Shannon did it best.
We're going to be two in a row now that we agree on, which is a good thing, because I have a feeling we're going to fight on the next one. Yeah, I am 100% in agreement with you. This is one of my few non-Smallville picks on this list. I agree with you that Michael Shannon is my favorite General Zod as well.
Yeah.
I just think there's, you know, first of all, I agree with you in that you really understand, even though what he's doing is wrong, you sort of understand where he's coming from, because he sees his sole purpose in life as to protect the Kryptonian race. And so everything he does, he has a line in the movie where he's like, everything he does is for the good of Krypton. And like, there was just so much intensity in his performance. Like when he's getting sent to the Phantom Zone and he has that, I mean, it's just unbelievable how much intensity he was able to convey when he's like, I will find him. He won't be safe. I will find him. And he's telling Lara that. And then also like, towards the end of the movie, when, he's right before spoilers, he dies. He has that line where he's telling Superman, and he's just so angry, and he's just his last you know, his last act is that he's like, if you love these people so much, then you will mourn for them, and he's trying to kill that family. And it's just, there's just, I think that Michael Shannon's performance is one of the most underrated live action villain performances ever. I mean, I just think so much intensity, so it's just an unbelievable job in that role. So I'm in agreement with you on that one.
So I like when we agree.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's good.
Because I don't think we're going to agree on this next one, like I said.
Who is the next one?
Jimmy Olsen.
Oh, boy, we're not going to agree on this. I can tell already. All right, who's going first? Who's going first?
You're first on... Wait,
No, you're first on Jimmy Olsen. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm first on this one.
Get your small little fetish out of the way. Let's go.
Oh boy. Aaron Ashmore is my favorite Jimmy Olsen. Oh my goodness. And Aaron Ashmore is my favorite Jimmy Olsen because, and even though technically, I mean, you could argue that he wasn't actually playing.
I'm gonna tell you why he's not Jimmy Olsen, but go ahead. Just explain why you like this guy. Go ahead. I'll explain why he didn't even come in the conversation. Go ahead.
I love this. He just had so much enthusiasm for what he was doing, and he was always getting himself into situations that he shouldn't have been in, but he was just so likable, I felt like, and he just had so much enthusiasm for what he was doing, and he was trying to do the right thing, even though he sometimes would get himself into a lot of trouble, and I really sympathized with him a lot of what he went through in season 8 in terms of you know, he was on to Davis Bloom pretty much from the beginning, and you know, he really his relationship with Chloe and how that fell apart, and then at the very end when he, you know, just to the very end, I just found him such an immensely likable character, and he was always, the way he would call Clark CK all the time, and he always made me smile when he was on screen, and then at the very end he you know, he's responsible for the Watchtower, and you know, when he died at the very end, I really was crushed when Davis killed him at the end, because it was like he was always. You know, he had the best of intentions, and I felt like that's the best thing I could say about his character, is that is just, he was always trying to do the right thing, and yeah, I loved Smallville's Jimmy Olsen.
All right, Jimmy Olsen from Smallville did not enter my ballot at all, because what was his name? Aaron, which Ashmore is it?
Aaron Ashmore.
Okay, the other one is, what's the other one? The X-Men guy?
Sean. Okay. He was on Smallville too.
Yeah. Aaron Ashmore didn't enter my conversation as Jimmy, because I was talking to myself when I was making this list. And the reason is, he never played Jimmy. He was Fimmy. which is an acronym, Fake Jimmy. And the reason why I say that is because, spoilers for it, a show that's been off the air since 2011, he was Jimmy Olsen's older brother. Now, did he play the character of Jimmy Olsen well? Yes, but it's notwithstanding, Smallville made the stupid decision to say, he's Jimmy's brother. And so he didn't get into the conversation for me. So while
how does that take away from his performance, though, Adam?
It doesn't, but he didn't play Jimmy Olsen. He played Fimi.
Well, he also played Jimmy Olsen in that final scene.
Okay, then I'll give him props for the final scene. But if we're talking about one scene, then yeah, he was a great Jimmy Olsen. But fact of the matter is, he was Jimmy Olsen's brother. And so Fimi is not my choice. My choice goes to, this is probably the only Superman Returns actor on this list. Sam Huntington is the Jimmy Olsen choice. When I think of the comic books and when I think of Jimmy Olsen, the visual interpretation of that to a T is Sam Huntington. He really, to me, especially in Superman Returns, was the best friend to Clark. He was basically Clark's guide back to the world when he came back after that six-year absence. And he was a Superman fanboy, you know, to boot. You could see that, especially in the scene where Superman saves the globe of the Daily Planet. You could definitely see the Superman fanboy come out in Jimmy. So I think he had all the makings, the best friend to Clark, and the idolization of Superman. So I love the fact that it was a throwback and that he wore a bow tie. I thought it was cool. So I give it to Sam Huntington.
Okay. I like Sam Huntington too, but yeah, we're going to disagree on that one, I guess. next up is one of Jimmy Olsen's fellow, I was about to say co-worker, but not really a co-worker, his boss at the Daily Planet, Perry White.
All right. This is going to be, I don't know where you're going to go with this, but my choice for Perry White is Lane Smith from Lois and Clark, The New Adventures of Superman. This guy was just fantastic. He was ornery as a boss, but he was also, he also had that love and affection for Lois, Clark, and Jimmy. But, you know, God forbid he ever showed it. Like, when he showed it, it was the rare moments between the three of them. But, you know, that boisterous, loud boss routine really made me laugh, and it was a lot of fun in Lois and Clark. And I love the Great Shades of Elvis and the Elvis obsession that version of Perry White had. I'm a big Elvis fan as well, so that probably colors my thing. But I grew up with Lois and Clark, so that colors my choice. But for me, it's Lane Smith as Perry White.
Okay. All right. I don't have the same choice as you this time.
Please tell me it's not the guy from Smallville. It was one episode.
Oh, okay. It was more than one episode, because he showed up in season 3 and then he came back.
Oh, good lord.
All right, go ahead. But it is not Michael McKean.
Oh, hold on Smallville. A minute. I got to get back off the floor. Go ahead. Who's your...
my pick for Perry White is Lawrence Fishburne.
Oh, a good choice.
Thank you. So this is another one of my exceptions.
Somebody that actually played Perry White.
Somebody that actually... if I had chosen Michael McKean, that somebody that actually played Perry White,
too. I would have said he played him, but for one episode.
No, he was in multiple episodes. But this is, I will say this, this is the last non-Smallville episode in on my list. But yeah, so Lawrence Fishburne as Perry White. In both Man of Steel and Batman v Superman, I thought that he really added. I mean, those are two very dark movies in general. Batman v Superman more so than Man of Steel, but you know, they deal with a lot of serious things. And I feel like he added just the right amount of levity to the movies, where it didn't feel out of place or anything, but it added just the right amount of levity to these very serious movies. And I just thought so many of his lines just crack me up every time. Like his water wet line always gets a chuckle out of me when I watch BVS. The way he's always trying to get, he's like always asking Clark, like, why aren't you covering sports? You're supposed to be covering sports. And Clark's just trying to just cover the Batman. And he's just like,
say something about say a line about Dorothy, the Wizard of Oz or something.
Yes. Yeah, I believe so.
Click his heels.
And run to Kansas. Yes. Yes. Perry, for Perry White, Lawrence Fishburne is my pick. I love him in the role.
That's a fair. He was my second choice.
Okay, all right, that's fair. I can see that, definitely. So we're not in agreement on that one, but
we understand each other's choices.
Yes, absolutely. All righty. Next up is my favorite character on this list, my favorite choice, I guess, my favorite one to pick, I guess I should say. Well, one of my two favorites, I guess I really should say. That would be Lana Lang. Mm-hmm. And I have a feeling you know who I'm going to pick for this one.
You're going first, correct?
Yeah, I believe I'm first on this one.
All right, go ahead.
Alrighty. This is going to be no surprise. Kristen Kreuk is my favorite Lana Lang. I thought she was absolutely phenomenal on Smallville. Just like I was a huge Klonna shipper when it comes to Smallville, and I just loved her relationship with Clark over the course of that series and how it progressed. I really she just had so much chemistry with Tom Welling on the show, and just in terms of really being his first love, and always, you know, that she really, you could tell how much she loved him on the show, and that she was there for him. Even when she was with Lex, you could see how much she cared about Clark still. And, you know, right up until the very end, like my one of my favorite scenes, even though it's like one of the most heartbreaking scenes in the show, is when she gets the kryptonite infused into her body, and she and Clark have their final kiss and they say goodbye. And it's just one of the most it's really one of the most heartbreaking scenes, and it's so phenomenally acted by Kristen Kreuk. And I think just over the course of the series, how much she grew and how she really did change over the course of the series, because I feel like her time with Lex did sort of rub off on her, and she really did sort of take some attributes from him and become a more hardened character, I think, a little bit. But at the same time, there was still the loving aspect of her. And then also, like, if you kept reading all the way into the season 11 comic, she became the superhero Valkyrie, and was fighting crime off on her own. So I just think her journey on that show was just amazing, and Kristen Kreuk just did a phenomenal job.
Well, I'm going to shock everybody here, and I'm going to agree with Jordan. It's Kristen Kreuk.
Hey!
Here's why. My other choices are Stacy Haiduk from Adventures of Superboy. I like that show, but the Lana character just, I don't know, she was okay. She was fine in the role. She was solid in the role, but it didn't, you know, the performance didn't elicit any emotion one way or the other from me. The second choice would have been Annette O'Toole, and while it was a nice break from Margot Kidder's Lois Lane, which I find insufferable, that was a nice break. But I mean, there wasn't enough exploration of their backstory and their history together in that one film that really justified me choosing her, even though Annette O'Toole was fantastic in that role. I give it to Kristen Crook because, look, I'm not going to defend the fact that I hated when she was with Lex. I thought it was stupid for the show to put them together. I hated when that season where she was possessed by the witch. To me, it was a stupid storyline. Sometimes the writers of the show wrote her as a whiny, insufferable, bitchy individual, and I couldn't stand when she got like that. But when they got the core, essential elements of the Clark and Lana relationship right, her performance was a part of them getting it right. And it's that first love / unrequited love that, when the writers got it right and the two actors were on, all parties really nailed it. And I thought the most heartbreaking things was when she was, when her DNA was infused with the kryptonite and she had to steer clear and stay away from Clark. That was just like Jordan said, heartbreaking. So, and look, no matter what, all my complaints aside, Kristen Crook's Lana Lang will always have the get out of jail free card. That is the Nicodemus episode. If you haven't seen it, go watch it. That's all I'm going to say until we get to Smallville. But Nicodemus, that's all in the name. That's the only word I got to tell people. And you know what I'm talking about.
I know what you're talking about. And I'll also say that that's the first kiss between Clark and Lana, even though technically I don't really count it as that because, well, she was under the influence of the Nicodemus. But there's also that in that episode, so. Yes. But yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I understand. I understand that part of your choice for Lana was just based on, you know, a process of elimination, I guess. It sounds like a little bit.
The eight seasons or whatever that they built the history. They built up they gave us the relationship in a full, fully explored way where I latched onto that.
Yeah, absolutely. Me too. And that's what I love so much about the relationship on that show is how much we saw it progress over the seasons and their ups and their downs. We saw both of those. I of course didn't like when she was with Lex either. But at the same time, like looking back on that in retrospect, I can understand part of it because it took the story in some interesting places. And I'm not as mad about it as I was. I was super mad about it at first, but in the end, once they got back together, once Lana and Clark got back together, and season 7 when they were back together was one of the best parts of the show in my opinion, and so I was able to not have such harsh feelings towards season 6 after that.
Okay.
But yeah, Kristen Crook without a doubt. Alrighty, we ready to move on?
I'm ready.
Alrighty. Next up is going to be Lex Luthor.
All right, and I'm going first.
You are.
All right. Without question, without a shadow of doubt in my mind, there is one definitive live-action Lex Luthor, and that is Michael Rosenbaum from Smallville. To me, I love the fact that they had, they attempted to give us a friendship for the two characters and how it kept getting derailed, whether it was Clark's lies or Lex's lies. But ultimately, Rosenbaum did the evil businessman that we've come to, the megalomaniac, the evil control freak, the businessman. And again, with the history with his father and the way his father treated him, all these things contributed to why he was a fleshed out Lex, like a fully fleshed out Lex Luthor. And I think, in much like the case of General Zod, this show made me sympathize with Lex Luthor. I understand why he acted the way he acted, why he did some of the things he did. I don't condone everything, obviously, the methods he used, but I understood it. And I there were moments where I felt sorry and sympathy for Lex. Whereas, you know, Sherman Howard on the Adventures of Superman, it was more of the campy variety for my liking. Campy is never my go-to thing. I totally detest with a passion the Gene Hackman version, that stupid land scheme, and the real estate Lex Luthor just annoys the crap out of me. And the fact that Bryan Singer carried that over with one of the greatest actors of all times and could have been the best Lex Luthor of all time, Kevin Spacey, but instead he was doing a knockoff of Gene Hackman, pissed me off. And you know, I was one of the few that liked most of what Jesse Eisenberg did, but it's by comparison to the other Luthers, it's a small sample. It's too small of a sample size. In that one film, granted, the extended cut does help with that, but even still, I have to give it to Michael Rosenbaum.
This should be no surprise. There is no other choice.
I would have slapped you if it wasn't Michael Rosenbaum.
Yeah, if I had chosen all these other Smallville actors, and then for Lex, I didn't choose Michael Rosenbaum. Yeah.
You would have got a backhand through the computer.
No, but Mike Rosenbaum, without a doubt, hands down, for all the reasons you said, and I just think that he, like you said, his friendship with Clark and how we saw it progress into villainy, and we saw his descent. Like he was not a terrible person at first. It's just he was a victim of circumstance in a lot of ways, and I think that part of it you saw, of course, over the course of the series is that what he wanted was what Clark had. He wanted loving parents like Clark had. He never got that. So all he was conditioned to do was to try and succeed in terms of the business world and to be ruthless and to do, he was conditioned to be ruthless and to do whatever it took. And it led him down this path of paranoia and of doing questionable things, and he just did one questionable thing after another until he was truly evil. And just like his performance was just so good, he was so sly. He was very much a sly businessman, which really I wish we would get that more often in live action with Lex Luthor. Yeah. But Michael Rosenbaum really was what I've always wanted with live action Lex Luthor in terms of like being that sly businessman and over those first seven seasons of Smallville, and then I really missed him in the last three seasons of Smallville until he came back at the very end. But I can't even do justice to how good he was in the role. He is the definitive live action Lex Luthor, and he just gave a brilliant performance, one of the best live action villains of all time.
100% agreement.
Awesome. Well, there's another one that we are in tight agreement on. So we'll see how these last two. We've only got two more on our list, and we'll see how these last two shape up in terms of that. So next up is Lois Lane.
And you're going first for that one.
All righty. So my pick for Lois Lane, and this might shock some people, given actually. I mean, maybe it won't shock people because everybody knows how big a Smallville fan I am, but they also know how big of a Klonna shipper I am. So maybe it'll be shocking to them that I am actually going to pick Erica Durant.
Nobody's shocked. Who are we kidding? Nobody's shocked by this.
And even though, and I've said it before, I would have been totally fine if they had gone apart from the continuity of the comics, and if Clark had ended up with Lana at the end of Smallville, I would have been so happy with that.
Shit would have hit the fan, people.
However, I want to preface it with that, but I want to say, even though I didn't ship Clark and Lois when it comes to Smallville. I think that Erica Durance gave such a phenomenal performance as Lois Lane. Just she had the snarky attitude. You could see how intelligent she was as a reporter. Just how much how good she was at getting a scoop. In terms of like she just had so much determination when it came to getting a story, and she never let it go. She had a bunch of funny. She had so many funny moments on Smallville that really just cracked me up. I think that Erica Durance really she reminds me a lot of in terms of like I feel like Dana Delaney's performance in the DCAU is sort of another definitive version of Lois Lane, and I feel like Erica Durance is basically the live action version of that. So she by extension is the definitive live action Lois Lane, and I just think that she's just so phenomenal in the role of Lois Lane.
Good choice. This was a very difficult choice for me. It came down to two. Okay. Is there an option just before? Is there an option for a tie?
Why not, Adam? I'm not strict. Why not?
Because here's why. This changes with my mood. This choice.
Okay.
One That's day fair. It's one. One day it's the next. But since Jordan's granting me the benefit of a tie, it's a tie between Terry Hatcher and Erica Durance.
Okay.
Both were. You really get the sense that throughout the course of their respective shows, while you know, Lois was at one point, you know, Smallville Lois, I have to preface which Lois I'm talking about. Smallville Lois was head over heels at one point for the red blue blur, and then the blur, as they call them. Boy, did I hate those names, but that's what they call them. And early on, Lois was head over heels for Superman on Lois and Clark. As time went on in both those respective series, they both truly were in love with Clark Kent and not just the superhero persona. And I love that about both shows and both portrayals. I thought both were exemplary examples of hard-hitting reporters. I liked what I kind of sort of bought, and I didn't think I was gonna buy when they first said they were bringing her in to Smallville, was the reasoning that she didn't, because of the Army brand nature, she didn't have enough credits. Why was she at Smallville High? That was my big hang up when they announced her. But I bought the excuse because the Army, she was, you know, she was an Army brat, and she didn't because of the movie and all that stuff with the father. She didn't have enough credits, and then she did. And both Terry Hatcher and Erica Durance excelled at the with the snarky banter with Clark Kent, with their respective Clark Kents. And both women were drop-dead gorgeous. And I'm not saying that that's a prerequisite for being Lois Lane, but in my opinion, yes, personality is a big deal. But if you're going to win the fascination, like if you're going to take the world's greatest superhero, this alien who can do and be anything he wants, if you're going to take his breath away, being drop-dead gorgeous is because what I'm trying to say, I'm not trying to be superficial, but, you know, love at first sight, well, that sight has to be, the sight part of it's physical, right? And so both were out of this world gorgeous, and they were able, which gives me belief that yeah, they're gonna catch the eye of the of the world's most powerful man, and of this alien being, and then their personality is what ultimately grounds him and helps him remain tied to humanity. And I think both of those actresses were flawless in both areas, so that's why I picked both. And that I think it was 1995 image that was the most downloaded image on the internet of Terry Hatcher draped in the Superman cape. Definitely there's a reason why. And as I said, Erica Durance is stunning as well, and also from Canada. And I had to, that's why part of it had to be a tie, because she's from Canada as well. She's another homegirl. And I had to, because I didn't go with one, I had to rectify the situation. So thank you for granting me that tie. And those are my choices.
Hey, well, that's fair. I had a solid choice for Erica Durance, but a tie is I'll take it in terms of agreeing with you on with Erica Durance. So, and I agree. Terry Hatcher, I really do like as Lois as well. So, we're in close agreement there, not complete agreement, but close agreement. So I guess we'll get to our final character of the night, and it's no surprise who that final character is. It could be two characters. I don't know. I just picked one. I don't know if you have separate ones for this, but
separate choices.
You do have separate choices. Okay. All right. Cool. Well, this will be interesting then. So, of course, the last choice, it's no surprise, but Superman/Clark Kent. So yeah, go ahead, Adam.
Aren't you first, or?
Oh, am I? I am.
You said Erica Durance, but you didn't really elaborate. But I guess. Sorry. You're right. You went first, and then yeah. Never mind. I'm going first. All right. Another hard choice, and it's still as I'm choosing it right now, it's still causing me a lot of pain. So I'm going to go with it, just to delay the inevitable. I'm going to go with Clark Kent first.
Okay.
For me, there's only one choice that I can make. And as Clark Kent, I'm going to go with Dean Cain. Because I actually believed him as a reporter. I honestly, genuinely did. And he was more than any of the other ones. And I love the fact that he wasn't bumbling at all. Like, he wasn't a bumbling fool. He was just a normal guy, an average. He played Clark as an average, normal guy. And that average normalcy is what precluded everybody else from assuming that he was Superman. And his Superman and his Clark legitimately had two different hairstyles. I'll say that. His Clark had the slick, had the hair parted in two ways. And his Superman had the slick back hair, which was kind of the reverse of the normal, which I thought was kind of a cool twist. But yeah, his just average normalcy as Clark Kent, I think, really sold the idea of, well, this guy, it's impossible. Look how average he is. He's not going to be Superman. Whereas I think Christopher Reeve in the Clark Kent persona, oh my God, that was a farce. That was so over the top and ridiculous that I'm not going to say cringe, because I love what Christopher Reeve did in the role overall, but it bugs me. It genuinely, that version of it genuinely bugs me. So that's why I chose Dean Cain. For Superman, oh boy. I gotta go with Henry Cavill as Superman. And I'll tell you why. Because his Superman from Man of Steel onto Batman vs. Superman, and then I'm pretty sure culminating in Justice League, is on a journey. And he's on a journey to the Superman we know and love in the comics. He's not there yet as of right now, but he's going there. And that's part of why I love Henry Cavill, because we're progressing to a fully formed Superman. Where, you know, like, and, you know, he's kind of, the fact that he's, once he finds out that he's an alien in Man of Steel, he's lost. He's finding his place in the world. And that makes the character instantly more relatable to me, because at one point or another in all of our lives, we're lost trying to find out who we are in this world. That is a universal issue that we all have to go through. So I appreciated that. The other thing I appreciate about Henry Cavill Superman is that despite the fact that as a kid he's bullied and treated like crap by Pete Ross, and as an adult he's pushed around in that bar, like he's, you remember those when those hicks came to the bar and the guy was throwing beer at him and all that stuff,
yeah,
treating him like crap, and then when he becomes Superman and makes his first stand against humanity, or for humanity I should say, two things happen. In spite of the fact that by the time Batman vs. Superman rolls around, half of the human race wants him to go home and wants him gone because he's an alien and he's a foreigner. And despite the fact that, you know, in Man of Steel, like I said, he chose in Man of Steel Earth over Krypton. And he chose again in Batman vs. Superman at the end when he says, this is my world, you are my world. Again, he's choosing Earth. In spite of the fact that, like I said, half of the world hated him. It doesn't get more Superman than making the choice of humanity in spite of all these things. And yes, he doesn't pull a cat out of a tree. And yes, he doesn't look back at the camera and smile like a goof every 5 seconds. But those actions, those choices, are what make Henry Cavill Superman, in my opinion.
Alrighty. I like.
There's a hush over the crowd. Case closed. He doesn't have to make his choice. We're done. It's over. Podcast done. I need to hear this part. Go ahead. Blaspheme. Now you're going to blaspheme. Go ahead.
Alrighty. Well, I will say I like Dean Cain as Clark Kent, so I understand that choice, and I love Henry Cavill as Superman. So I think you made some great points about Henry Cavill, and I really love him in the role. So you did make some amazing points about what makes Henry Cavill Superman a great Superman. For me, there's one choice for both of these though, and it's not a question for me. And it's going to piss you off, Adam. Tom Welling is my choice for Superman and for Clark Kent. And I know the first thing you're going to say, Adam, is that Tom Welling did not play Superman. And my rebuttal to that would be that he was pretty much playing Superman when he was the blur and the red-blue blur. It was Okay, then. All right.
I'll give you that.
So for me, even though he wasn't being called Superman and he wasn't wearing the traditional Superman costume, what he was doing was Superman to me in that, even though he hadn't adopted the mantle. So To me, we got to see what it would be like to see him in that role in those final seasons of Smallville when he was operating in Metropolis as the Blur and the Red Blue Blur. And I just think his Clark Kent was so good, too, because he was charming and he had, I mean, he didn't do the bumbling. He did a little bit of the bumbling thing when Slows tried to convince him to do that.
But it wasn't overblown like Christopher Reeve. Like, and I get it.
Right.
Like, I respect Christopher Reeve and I love what he did for the role. But I don't know. To me, it was too much.
Right. It was.
Of that version of Clark Kent, Brandon Roth did it better.
I agree. And so I think that Tom Welling, he did just enough of that, but it wasn't over the top. And I think that was what made his Clark Kent so well. And I think he was so relatable too as Clark Kent. Like, you really got to, and this was part of just getting to see him go through high school and all. You got to see him face really human problems throughout the show. And I think that really one of the things, first of all, I will say that I think that his romance with Lana Lang, with Kristen Kreuk, is one of the best on-screen TV romances ever. And I've got to, I mean, Tom Welling is certainly a part of that. So that's one thing that gives Tom Welling, just like with Kristen Kreuk, that's one thing that makes me love him so much in that role. And the other thing is just seeing his progression. I mean, you talked about that's part of one of the things that makes Henry Cavill's Superman so good, is that we're seeing his progression to be the really heroic, inspirational Superman. But I think we really saw that a lot with Tom Welling as well. I mean, we got 10 seasons of seeing him grow into that role. And so I think that that's just unprecedented to get to see that long of a hero's journey and to see every step of the way see his progress. And I think that was so good. And I think by the end, he really did embody that hope and optimism and truth, justice, and American way that Superman represents. And I think it was just – I think Tom Welling just did such a good job with that. And the other thing I want to say that I don't think Tom Welling gets enough credit for is when he would play alternate versions of Superman, like either when it was the same Superman, like when he was on Red K – and I think Tom Welling did such a good job with that, but also when he played like Ultraman, and I think he did a great job with that as well. So for all those reasons, that's why Tom Welling is my favorite Superman and Clark Kent.
Yeah, man, look, I'm not going to argue with your choice. I mean, that's the Superman of your childhood, and I get that. You grew up with that. I mean, you grew up with that version for 10 years. I can't argue with that, even though whether I agree with it or not, I agree with some of your points. I got no problem with your choice there.
Alrighty, fair enough then. I think, you know, this was really fun, man. Like, just going through these.
I like doing these kind of episodes.
The different characters.
I mean, we're going to do one for Batman, obviously. I mean, I just wish the DC Universe had. I mean, we could do it. I mean, there is no other. Yeah. Well, could we do it for. Could we do it for Flash?
That's the one I was thinking. That's the only one that we could maybe do it for. But even with that, I think we'd have to wait till we get to more of Ezra Miller's Flash, because I think we've got to wait for at least Justice League and maybe even Flashpoint for me to feel comfortable doing it for the Flash, though.
We'll definitely get there.
Yeah. With Batman, though, I can't wait when we do the Batman one. Yeah.
But that's pretty much it. That's our list. Let us know. Do you agree with our list? Do you disagree? I know some people are going to disagree because I chose Henry Cavill, and that's going to cause a shitstorm among some people. But hey, that's my opinion, and I'm proud and not ashamed to say that. But let us know what you think. Who's your favorite Superman? Who's your perfect Lois Lane and Lex Luthor and all these characters? Let us know in the comments on Facebook or wherever. And let's do, before we go out, let's do social media plugs, Jordan.
Ah, you remember this time, Adam. Yeah. Awesome.
You know, it'll stick.
Yeah, there you go. And this is one place you can send us your picks, too. So you can find me on Twitter and on Instagram at BatFanJordanV.
You can find me on Twitter at Superhero Sci-Fi.
Awesome. And I'll also solicit some iTunes reviews as well. So If you enjoy our podcast, and or if you don't enjoy it, either way though, we'd love to hear from you. And if you want to leave us an iTunes review, we'd love to hear from you. So please do so.
If you guys have questions, leave us questions. Jordan puts out a call for questions a few days before we record. He usually does that on Twitter, correct?
Yeah, I usually try to do it on Twitter and in the Facebook group.
So is Multiverse Musings. So go to Facebook, look up Multiverse Musings, and you'll find us. And you can leave your questions either there or on Twitter. And if you leave questions, we'll be happy to answer them. Until next time, we hope you have a wonderful week. And we will talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.